The tunnels were either long, with nothing leading off except at either end, or else they had the small partitioned living units that were full of potential enemies. This tunnel had nothing. Nothing except the closed door that stood at the end of the corridor, formed by the low enclosure. Jack felt the pit of his stomach grow cold. It was the first time he had seen a door during the whole of his exploration. The albino stopped in his tracks and hunkered down against the wall, keeping each end of the tunnel under watch. So far in his exploration, he hadn't come across any Sekhmen. Come to think of it, he hadn't even heard any moving about within the Ville. Could it be that there were no Sekhmen within the underground Ville itself, but only stationed at the farthest reaches to protect the hidden entrances from intruders? If so, then there was a very good chance that Jack would come across some Sekhmen very soon. From the drop in temperature and the extent of tunnel he had traveled without seeing any living quarters, he was pretty sure that he had to have hit one of those extreme reaches of the Ville. Given time, he could find his way back to the sleeping quarters the companions had been allotted. But did he have time? With no wristchron to measure how long he had been exploring, he had only his instinct, blunted by the lack of natural daylight, to aid him. This told him that he had been roaming the Ville for several hours, and he wouldn't have time to find his way back before the inhabitants were generally awake and questions would be asked. Even if he had seen nothing, any sect chief worth his salt would assume that Jack had discovered any secrets that may be hidden. So, with retreat and perhaps another night's exploration denied, Jack figured he may as well press on. Whatever was behind the door ahead, he would need to know if he and his companions were to make it through their stay in Ra in one piece. It was the general rise in background noise that awakened Ryan. The people of Ra in the partitioned units around were getting up and beginning to go about their daily business. Their muted voices and shuffling were enough to disturb the light sleep that had kept the one-eyed warrior alive for so long. He opened his good eye, the light from outside the curtain filtering through in the artificial morning. Just as the lights were dimmed when night came around, so the Ville dwellers' lamps and the lighting that lined the tunnels had beckoned the dawn of the new day. The lamplighter shuffled past their curtain partition, tunelessly humming some dirge to himself. Ryan gently disentangled himself from the arms of the still-sleeping Christie, moving his body from under her where she had lain across him. She murmured to herself and opened her eyes sleepily.
"Morning."
Ryan rose from the bed.
"What passes for it?"
The sounds of his own rising had caused the others to stir, and Ryan reflexively made a quick head count. He was glad he had done it.
"Where's Jack?"
Jack Lauren padded down the tunnel. Despite his heavy combat boots, his footfalls were quieter than the echo of someone else's footfalls. As he reached the door, he cast a wary eye around the lintel. There were no alarms or booby traps that were visible. Extending a hand, he traced around the lintel with his fingertips, barely touching the edges. There were no wires of any kind. The door was made of beaten metal, the hammer blows that had shaped the old sheets into a flat door still visible, the welded edges rough. There was a lock set into the door beneath an old wooden lever handle. The fact that it was a wooden handle reassured him that there was little chance of the handle itself being electrified. Jack brushed the handle with his fingertips. Nothing happened, so he took a tentative hold of it, and gently started to depress the lever. It was then that the sound of someone approaching reached out to him. They were still some way off, but in the silence of the tunnel, broken only by the shallow sound of his own breath, it was loud enough for Jack's sensitive hearing to discern that whoever it may be was approaching him slowly, with a shuffling walk that suggested lameness. The newcomer was also singing to himself and stopping every few yards. Jack doubted that it was a Sekhmen. It sounded too slapdash and without stealth. Someone carrying out routine tasks within the Ville, no doubt. But still, someone who may be armed and who could raise an alarm. Outside, Jack would have taken no chances and chilled whoever it was. But in here, where could he hide the body? And whoever it was would, as a routine worker, be missed. There was nowhere to hide in the tunnel, not even to position himself so that he could ambush the newcomer. He would have to try to get through this door and hope that he could deal with whatever was on the other side. The trouble was, when he depressed the lever, nothing happened. The door stayed fast. He pushed at it, gritting his teeth as he exerted pressure, yet tried to control that effort so that the door wouldn't suddenly explode inward with a noise that would only attract the attention he was trying to avoid. The door refused to move. The shuffling and humming were getting closer. Jack cursed to himself. The smell of sweet, burned human flesh filled his nasal cavities as he leaned up against the door, and through the thick soundproofing of the metal, he could just about discern some quiet whimpering and shuffling. He was no Doomy, but he had a bad, bad feeling about whatever was hidden behind the door. That would have to wait until later, though. Right now, he had to get back to his friends without being seen. And with the shuffling growing louder, approaching the bend at the far end of the tunnel, that was going to prove difficult. Jack looked at the walls and ceiling of the passage that stretched in front of him. There was nowhere, really, to hide. Except maybe...
Look, Dad, what was I supposed to do? I asked Jack if he wanted me to go with him, and he said no.
I would have expected you to stop him, not offer to go with him. Fire blasted to hell. You know that we don't move in these situations without knowing what each other's doing. Why do you think we survive like we do? We operate as a team.
You were all asleep, and Jack was going no matter what. Am I supposed to wake you all for a discussion?
Ryan glowered at his son. He knew that in the same circumstances he would have offered to go with Jack. Two on a scouting party stood a better chance of returning and reporting than one. Yet they had to keep some kind of discipline together.
Okay. It would have been better with two of you out there watching each other's backs than just Jack on his own. But it would have been better if he'd done it tonight when we could all be in on it.
It's Jack you need to tell that to.
The two Cotters, father and son, held steady their gaze, neither willing to step down. The tension between them was heightened by the fact that they had to keep their voices low, only too well aware that it would be easy for anyone passing by to overhear them. Their barely reined in anger was amplified by this, as was their inability to let fly with their anger at each other. Eventually, it was Doc who interjected and broke the deadlock.
Be that as it may, the main point surely is that Jack has not returned, and the question leading from that must be, why?
Only the first of a lot of questions, Doc.
J.B. moved across to the curtain that partitioned them from the tunnel outside, where there were the sounds of people in transit. He pulled the material to one side, casually checking who was outside their unit, seemingly scratching himself idly, and casually acknowledging those passers-by who greeted him. He then drew the curtain fully across and returned to the others.
No sick men watching over us.
Right. First thing we need to do is try to find Jack. Is he in trouble? If not, what has he found that's stopping him returning?
Why did he feel the need to do it?
Doc favored the redhead with an indulgent smile.
Surely you of all people don't need to ask such a question. One only has to look at you to see the bugs gnawing at the corners of your consciousness.
Very picturesque, Doc.
He's right, though. It's that creepy Jenna. She's up to something, I'm sure.
But does Alien know about it? It could make all the difference.
Eventually. Right now our problem is Jack, and how we find him without arousing suspicion.
The lamplighter came around the sharp bend and shuffled along the tunnel toward the metal door. He paused at each of the small oil lamps that were hung at regular intervals along the walls, lighting each one in turn until the tunnel was lit with a dull yellow glow that reflected off the metal door. With the final lamp in this tunnel now safely lit, he had completed the day's work, and he could retire to his unit and sleep before it was time to eat. His leg was paining him, and he was grateful that this was his only job within the community. And then, everything went black. Jack picked himself up from the floor and looked at the lamplighter. He was unconscious and would remain that way for some time. When he came around, he would have no idea how he had come to pass out, and would probably worry that he had suffered some sort of fit. But that worry would die away as time passed, and there would be nothing to cause alarm, either for himself or for the sec men, which was exactly the way Jack wanted it. He had taken advantage of the one piece of cover available to him, the ceiling. The water and heating pipes ran close to the top of the wall on one side of the tunnel, and on the other was a series of brackets that had, in the pre-dark days, probably held steady a series of electric cables that had long since perished or been removed. As the shuffling and humming neared the bend of the corridor, Jack had taken hold of the high brackets on one side of the tunnel and heaved himself up toward the ceiling, swinging his legs up with a tremendous kick and planting his feet above the level of the pipes so that his heels rested on the pipes themselves. He hoped that the ceiling was high enough and the shadows deep enough to mask him from whoever walked beneath. He was lucky. The lamplighter passed beneath, lit the last lamp, and turned to shuffle back. Jack dropped noiselessly behind him, timing the fall so that the edge of his outstretched